You're listening to Well Met.
Well Met.
A Hearthstone podcast brought to you by BlizzPro.com.
Well Met.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode number 78 of Well Met. We are a Hearthstone podcast brought to you by BlizzPro.com. Today is September 18th, 2016 from Denver, Colorado. I am John Horseman, and with me, of course, is the crew, but we've got a very special guest. I'm really excited about this show. This is going to be amazing. You may know him from the highly esteemed esports organization, Fade to Karma. You may know him because you've lost to one of his many deck concoctions on the ladder. Thanks a lot for that. Probably stymied me more than a few times. And you also have made known him because he's winning tournaments, playing in tournaments. Second place at Seat Story Cup number 5. It is none other than Jackie Chan Hutton. Jackie, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. My voice is a bit rusty today, but I'll do my best.
Dude, it's totally fine. Like I told you in the pre-show, the worse your voice is, the sexier you sound. So I'm sure Twitch chat is going to love hearing that. So that'll be great. Last but not least, from Kansas City, J.R. Cook. Hey, J.R.
Hey, John. Tomorrow's a big day, man. Big holiday coming up, too. Talk like a pirate day. I'm all ready for it.
I know where that button is only when I'm on podcast with JR. I always end up using the boo button at least once every freaking week.
I think we should celebrate though.
We should
by playing some pirate decks tomorrow.
Pirate decks tomorrow?
Pirate.
Deal. Yeah. Yes. So tell you what, actually, I'm going to say this right now. Everybody, send us, I didn't even talk about this. Send us a picture of the pirate deck that you play tomorrow. You have to send it to us tomorrow, twitter.com/wellmetpodcast. And I'll put you into a drawing for a Well Met t-shirt. How about that? We'll just give away t-shirts. Cool?
Awesome. I love celebrating Talk Like a Pirate Day.
Awesome.
So, I love this idea. Let's do
it. I love giving away t-shirts. So, yes, send us your pirate decks tomorrow. We'll do a random drawing, and the winner will be sent a Well Met podcast t-shirt. Oh, all right. This is fun. Feeling, getting loose up in here. We've got an incredible show stacked for you. We're going to be going through the news, talking about some meta, but I think maybe my favorite segment that we've had on this show for a long time with such an amazing deck builder and deck innovator like Jackie. There he is. And he knows it. I love it. We would be remiss if we did not take a look at deck building and deck teching in Hearthstone. So we're going to be doing that later on throughout the show. But first, let's talk about our weeks in Hearthstone, what you guys have been up to, where you guys are on the ladder, and all that jazz. Jackie, we'll start with you.
Well, I've just been streaming this week. I've been trying. Basically, I never play Rogue. So I've like dedicated this week to just playing Rogue. And like I was playing like Miracle Rogue. I've played like a Reno Nazoth Rogue and a Burgle Rogue as well. Mixed success. But the Reno Nazoth Rogue, I actually hit Legend with. Like I climbed from like rank 2. The Legend.
Really?
It's actually like, yeah, I was like surprised at how good it actually was.
It was a what? A Reno Nazoth?
Reno Nazoth and Zoth Rogue, yeah. With Blade Flurry.
Yeah. Just breaking all the Hearthstone rules, Jackie. Unbelievable.
But then I lost like 3 or 4 in a row, so I just gave up. I'll probably return to it at some point.
But you hit Legend with that?
Yeah, only from like rank 2, but yeah.
But still as like the hardest part. What is that deck like? So you said you've got Blade Flurry. Obviously, you have Reno, Jackson, and Azoth.
Yeah, champions like Tomb Pillager, Zarul. You have like the standard rogue stuff like Backstab SI, wow, prep, etc. I tried Thistletean at one point, but yeah, it was too greedy.
I feel like we're going to talk about this later. I feel like being greedy when you're building decks is like one of the hardest things to get past.
Yeah.
I would be the first one to be like,
it's really easy to just be like, I want that in there and that one.
Yes.
Just sat there in your opening hand with like everything over like five money, like, ah, shit.
Right. Right. Exactly. JR, what have you been up to, man?
I've been piloting my own little Warlock aggro deck that I built. I posted on Twitter earlier this week. If you wanted to see the deck list, I've been iterating through it. Talked to Jackie just shortly before that, and I think we're going to hopefully talk about it here later on the show and maybe get some suggestions on how I can make it better, and I'm looking forward to that. But it did get me to rank 5. It's struggling right now. It's very in-your-face, smork-themed. So
of course it is.
Back to the face hunter days. Or even before that. I was trying to make it more like early beta Hearthstone, where Warlock aggro was really, really good in the competitive scene back then, when I played in the mana grind tournaments and stuff like that. The Warlock aggro deck back in that day was actually what won me one of the mana grind tournaments. So I wanted to create.
Was that the one where you like beat Chalky or something like that? Who did you beat?
I beat Reels.
Reels, that's who it was.
Blizzard, yeah. I beat him in the semifinals with it and then went to the finals and won that. I'm curious to see what Jackie thinks about it. And hopefully we can make something that
rip him apart.
Maybe. Look at
man, but, I'm so excited for that.
But no, the other thing that I'm up to is I got invited to a Kansas City Firesides Gathering tournament, a Firesides Gathering that's coming up in October. If you go to kcfiresides.com, the event's there. It's taking place at the Boulevard Brewery, so it's like pay $20, and you have to be 21 or over because it's all the beer you can drink and all the Hearthstone you can play. And I think that's awesome.
In that order, by the way.
Yes. That's great.
Yes, in that order. So if you want to come and hang out with us, I think it's like October 17th or something like that. It's on a Monday night. So be prepared on the following Tuesday at work to struggle a little bit.
I don't know. I have a iron liver, so I do all right. Katie makes fun of me all the time because it just doesn't faze me.
So how have you been doing on the ladder, John?
Not too bad. I've been really trying to build up my EU collection. So on NA, I'm at rank 19, and it's been weird. I've gotten called out on Twitter twice. They're like, you're not rank 5. You're not rank 6, because I've been tweeting pictures from there. And like, you're not there. And then I'm like, yes, I am. I'm on EU. And so I have to like, they switch over and like, oh, okay. So I've been doing that. I've been running a little bit of Zoo. I'm really close to my Golden Warlock, which how I don't already have that already is kind of awful. But I think I'm like 2 or 3 wins away. I promised a stream viewer that I wouldn't hit gold without him. So I switched over, played a little Shaman, and then just to spite myself, played a little, oh my God. Oh my God, my least favorite card, Yogg-Saron Druid. So played a little bit of that. And yeah, so that's been super fun. Usually once I hit rank 5 on EU, I will switch over to NA and then also try to go up to rank 5 as well. I don't like going beyond that because then I find out really how bad I am. So up to rank 5, stay there, and just say it's because I'm building a collection on another server. Is the way I do that. So
I end up with the other way around. Like I have like, I spend no time on NA, but then if ever like EU's down or something, I'll go on NA. When people are like, why are you ranked 20? You're meant to be good at the game. I'm like, don't play on NA. Like,
right. Oh, that's funny. Last thing is the Con Before the Storm event actually just All the panelists and moderators have been announced. And so this is, I think, really amazing. The panels, I think, are incredible this year. In the past, what Con Before the Storm has done is they invite specific podcasts to come on for 10 to 15 minutes to talk about their show or something about the scene for the game that they're podcasting. This year, what they do is they've got a moderator and they've got four panelists, and the moderator team, three out of four of them are absolutely freaking amazing. So moderating the Hearthstone panel, and Kevin is going to be sitting in on that panel, is going to be Garrett Weinzierl. I believe it's Garrett Weinzierl, Kevin, Espo from Legend of the Innkeeper. It'll be Chris, Chanman V, and then Josh Augustine from the Happy Hearthstone. And then I don't have the other panels memorized, but then Scott Johnson is going to be doing the Heroes of the Storm panel, which, holy crap. And then you've got Bay from Final Boss TV for World of Warcraft, which is amazing. And then you have me. I don't know how I will be moderating the Overwatch panel with Veritech, Frosty Fox, Rosh. I just got the list today, so I don't want to miss anyone, but it's an absolutely amazing, amazing panel. And so I'm really, really excited about this. If you're going to be at BlizzCon, you're going to want to be there. It's going to be Thursday night. It's going to be, Kevin Ellis from the Cavalry, of course, Lords of the Storm, those guys, it's going to be amazing. So if you're going to be there Thursday night, it starts at 5:30. Make sure you're there. It's a lot of fun. We did it last year. We had a blast. So it's going to be fun. So that's it. Let's go into the news.
This Week in Hearthstone, Heroes of Warcraft.
Before we get started, we do want to thank our friends of the show, Albert T., The Real Ben, and Coral. Well Met is entirely supported by our fans. So if you like the show, like what we do, and want us to keep bringing on awesome guests like Jackie, head on over to patreon.com/wellmetpodcast. Find out how you can get involved. All right, let's talk some news here. So big news, kind of, the Hearthstone Welcome Bundle is now live. JR, what's going on with this one, man?
Yeah, so this is a kind of a cool little deal. You can only apply it once to your account for $4.99 in the U.S. I think it's the same in EU. I don't remember, though. It contains 10 classic card packs, and then you also get a class legendary, a random class legendary from the classic set. So basically, if you're like me and you already have all of the classic and basic cards, you know, times two, and you have a complete set anyway, this is still a pretty good deal because you can still get a good amount of dust that you can use to possibly go towards crafting another legendary with a later set, which is what I ended up doing. I ended up getting 1,580 dust because I did get another legendary in one of my packs. So I dusted them and was able to get one of the old gods legendaries that I was still missing. For $5 for a legendary, that's not a bad deal.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, that's really good. I think
starting as well. Like my dad is actually started playing Hearthstone, and he has he complains because he doesn't have any of the cards. So he's like, "Oh, this guy has this card that I don't have." That's not fair, but yeah, it's definitely a good deal.
Yeah, this is amazing, right? That's 50 cents a pack and a guaranteed legendary, which I think the last time that we heard about it, wasn't the math, JR, that you were guaranteed a legendary every 20 packs? Right? Like how the diminishing returns.
I think it was every 40. Or
was it 40?
If 40 is the same type of pack, then you're guaranteed.
Right. Okay. So, I mean, already that's a huge deal right there to get one guaranteed in 10. And JR, I've heard of a lot of people like you who have picked up two in those 10 packs. So like, that's really neat. Great for starters, great for people needing to fill out their collection. I have the whole classic set, so I didn't actually do it because I'm not missing any of the cards and I'm I maybe would get it for golden, but I don't know. I just, you know, $5, that's a burrito, bro, you know? So, but that's 50 cents a pack. Otherwise, you're looking at, what is it? Two packs for $3, and it's like seven packs for $10, something like that. So 50 cents a pack is a really amazing deal. You should definitely jump on it. Is there a time when that finishes up, JR? Do we have an end date?
I am not sure. I don't believe it says anything on the article itself, and I haven't read on anything about when that might end. So if you want to jump on it, I'd jump on it now, but I'm sure it's going to be available for quite a while.
Makes sense. JR, we got to hit on this really quick, but Hearthstone fans will probably be least affected by this next one. So Chris Metzen has retired at age 42. So Chris Metzen, I forget his official title, but he's like the lead.
He's like the lead creative
Of story or something like that. So he wrote all the lore and story for the Warcraft series, the Diablo series, the Starcraft series, and then Overwatch as well. So he is like one of the guys. There are very few people who you can, you know, say are like at the heart and soul of Blizzard and what they do. Chris Metzen is one of them. He's going to be retiring at the age of 42. I've already gotten teary-eyed talking about it on two other podcasts in the last week, so I'm not going to on this one. But JR, anything you want to add?
I mean, Chris Metzen, like John said, he was the heart and soul at Blizzard, really. He was the one that put these stories together and these, you know, gave these games a life, so to speak. And he also, like, whenever you watch BlizzCon, like, he was like the hype guy. You know, he was the one that right before Overwatch was announced, he was the one out there getting everybody hyped up for it and telling the story about it. Or if you remember a couple BlizzCons before that, when he did the whole Geek Is thing. He's an amazing speaker, a great story writer, and whenever I think of Blizzard Entertainment, I think of him. So this was a really big deal, and I'm sad to see him go, but to retire at the age of 42,
amazing.
Pretty darn awesome.
Yeah.
Pretty darn
amazing.
Awesome. I mean, yeah.
Well, and he did say that he will continue to voice Thrall in Warcraft, so we've still got him for some VO stuff. He may be stepping back from that, but I don't think it's going to be the last that we see from him overall. I feel like he'll still be lurking in the shadows, hopefully, especially for the Warcraft movie sequel that I'm banking on happening. So cool. All right,
I need to see that. I haven't even seen the first one. It's really bad.
You got to. It's still really good. I really liked it. I actually just bought it on iTunes. I don't normally buy a lot of movies. I just wait for them to go on Netflix and Hulu and Amazon Prime. I bought Warcraft, and I'm like 20 out of the 40 minutes through the special features stuff. Right. It's been really cool. He does one of the openings for... Well, he's like all throughout the special features, but talking about the original Orcs and Humans. And you're right, JR, he's an amazing speaker, amazing linguist. And the worlds he has made, especially in gaming, are among the top of all time. So that's huge. And a big reason why Blizzard has the following that it is today. So cool. Tesla Dorn in the chat says, brush up on your Chinese, because Warcraft did so well in the China market and made like, what, $30 million in the US?
Well, yeah.
True. So we might get it with English subtitles next time. Very good.
I liked it better than Star Wars over in China, but here it's like did nothing.
Yeah, exactly. That's interesting. Let's talk a little bit about some esports though, because we've got an inside track to all that.
The Pro Corner.
That bass hit so good. So we've had a couple of big things going on. First and foremost, we do want to congratulate Hot Meowth from HCT Summer Championships. He will be snagging the last NA, well, not the last NA slot, but he will be snagging the NA slot for BlizzCon that we'll see in November. So congratulations. Great games played all throughout. And I'm really excited for Last Call. There's a lot of big names going head to head. It's going to be fierce. I'm really excited for that. But let's talk a little bit about what we thought would be a smaller tournament. We talked about it in length last week, Batstone. So Firebat organized a tournament that utilized a community ban list and a player ban list. And we didn't know about the player ban list part because it wasn't actually published until after the show. But we did find out that the players were allowed a ban as well. And we saw bans from like Innervate. What else did we see, JR?
A lot of different zoo cards. We saw Ice Block get banned. Innervate, Preparation. Those are the ones that I can think of off the top of my head.
Yeah, so quite a few there, but this is exciting. So Batstone saw over 50,000 concurrent viewers, actually going above what we saw for the HCT preliminaries for NA and EU. So it didn't quite go as much as the NA championships. That got up over 60, but still, that's huge for a community-driven tournament like this, utilizing bans. Jackie, what are your thoughts on just the type of format that Batstone employed with these ban lists in general? Are you a fan of these removing certain cards from tournaments?
I'm a fan of it, yeah. I've kind of like, it's kind of grown on me. Because like when like Yogg first came out, like with Wizards of the Old Gods, and I was one of the only people who like really thought it was like super good and like on a competitive level, and I was like one of the only people who's like I brought it to the Winter Championships or something, and everyone was like, oh, why is he playing Yogg? Like and I found it really fun. Like I love Yogg, but then right, the more kind of you when you face it a lot, and then these games are just completely won, and then suddenly they're just lost just because they've got like some crazy RNG with Yogg. Like it's just like it's great for like a casual fun point of view, but for an actual competitive tournament, it's just not right, really. But yeah, I think Batstone's great. Also because like in these tournaments, you end up seeing the same decks like over and over, and you see like Aggro Shaman and Dragon Warrior, and then just for people to like suddenly you can't play these cards that are like extremely powerful, and you have to kind of think, oh, how I can't play these decks I've brought to every other tournament. What am I going to do? I have to like actually think and like make something new, which is what I like. Like people have to be innovative, which is like really important, I think. So yeah, I think it's great.
Awesome. So that's good. I was hoping you would like it. I would figure for a deck builder like yourself that a format that requires you to think differently about the cards that you're choosing, the decks that you're choosing, and almost adaptively, right? Because they had maybe, 48 hours from the time that the community and the player bans were live to when they were playing. So it's not just like, cool, I have 3 weeks to think of my decks with the best one. It's like, cool, 48 hours. It's not quite Challenge Stone where you have 30 minutes, but it is very close. And so it was really cool to see, and I'm really happy to see the community be so excited and so warm about that type of format. I'm interested to see, JR, do you think that the Hearthstone team is going to take cues from Batstone? Do you think that they're going to try to implement some type of strategy like this? Because in my opinion, this may indicate a disparity between how Blizzard is viewing competitive Hearthstone and how the community is. Now, this just might be a one-time thing, right? You know, Challenge Stone, while it maybe isn't a viable format long-term, something that you don't necessarily want to watch every week, to have a one of is amazing. And we saw great success with that. Do you think that this is like a one-time thing and the community was excited about it because, you know, we haven't seen this before? Or do you think that this may be the next kind of journey for competitive Hearthstone?
Well, I think community tournaments like this are very important to begin with anyway. Rather True. Than having just Blizzard, supplying the tournament scene, we need to have tournaments like this. And the more the tournament tries to be different, the better it's going to be. So I think Firebat did a really good job with this on grabbing a hold of some of the hatred towards Yogg and competitive play and saying, hey, we're going to do card bans with this tournament. And it was very well received. And I think we'll continue seeing that with community-style tournaments. I'm not sure if Blizzard themselves will latch onto something like that or not. But I do think after seeing this tournament, seeing how successful it is, and also seeing games in the competitive scene, like I remember seeing, it was a tournament this last week, and I don't remember the players, but the guy won. He was going to lose. He plopped down a Yogg and he won the game. And then afterwards they interviewed him and was talking to him about it. And he's like, yeah, I won. That was awesome. But at the same time, I had nothing to do with it. I just played Yogg and it won for me. And that, I don't know how to feel about that because that wasn't my skill level that ended up winning me the game. So that felt kind of bad. And so I think
it's important. Those games, by the way, because that's the only way that I win my games. So,
praise ten, play Yogg. Come on, Yogg.
Yes,
do it.
Come on. 10, double innervate Yogg. Whatever. I don't care. There's no other way I'm winning.
Yeah,
sorry,
but,
I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, but I think in the competitive scene, maybe not in the ladder, but in the competitive scene, I do think there needs to be, after seeing this and seeing it successful, I do think the community needs to come together and probably start looking at maybe putting together some kind of ban list and maybe going forward. Maybe, and if Blizzard would come out and have something, that would even be better because then you have the authoritative pillar speaking for the community.
Right.
I don't know if Blizzard would do that, but I think it would be a good move for them because we see it in other card games like Magic the Gathering. Magic the Gathering, if there is a card that's out there that's really messing with the competitive scene, they'll just go ahead and ban it from tournaments. And I think that is completely fine to do because then it gives them the ability to still create these kind of cards and allow them in the game, but also not totally mess up how the competitive scene is played.
Absolutely. And I think, honestly, I think you had hit on a really important point, and that is ladder and tournaments are very different. And the ladder can be fun. You can lose to Yogg and you can kill yourself with Yogg on the ladder and you're like, oh well, that's just one of my 700 games I played this month. Whatever, let's keep going. But we've seen, even in preliminaries, we've seen Yogg take people literally have $25,000 in a player's hand and watch Yogg just vaporize it right from their hands. And that is one of the worst feelings in the world. But getting beyond Yogg, so Yogg is going to phase out. It's going to be gone, you know, whatever, a year and a half from now, Yogg's gone. And there's still the bigger question of, should the ladder and the competitive scene see different card pools overall? And Jackie, I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on if we were to see different card pools and different stuff, if you think that's even a good idea, if you're like, no, just don't print Yogg, or if you're like, no, it's fine, have ladder be ladder, have tournament scene be tournament scene. And I'd be interested what you thought about that and what you think some good criteria is. As a competitive Hearthstone player, how do you know when a card is bad for tournaments?
Well, when a single card can decide a game without any kind of, like the reason Yogg and Tusk are singled out is because it's just complete luck. The whole card is like, you have no idea what's going to happen. Obviously Tuskar, there's like limited options, but Tuskar on turn three and then get a totem golem is just an insanely thing that shouldn't happen in a competitive tournament with like lots of money on the line. But I think it'd be, but then it's not like cards like Yogg are great for Hearthstone. Like Yogg is like such a crazy, wacky, fun card. Like if they just removed it from the game completely, I'd be so sad because there's so many crazy moments that like things happen. But
or even if they nerfed it, I would be
Exactly. But it should be able to still be in the game, but not be in competitive, high stake environments. Like it's.
Yeah,
I think it'd be like, completely fine for them to ban specific cards from tournaments. I think it'd be completely fine. I mean, you already have Standard and Wild, which have different card sets. I think it'd be completely fine.
Do you think that it?
Thing, great...
Yeah. Do you think that it would complicate the game for newer players? One of the things, one of the mantras that Blizzard has kind of had is we want it to be simple. We want it to be accessible. And already with cards being removed from Arena, and even then, we don't know, like, we know which cards those are, but a new player hopping into Arena would never know they're gone. Do you think that that could take away from that experience? Or are you more of the thing of, like, if they don't know what's there to begin with, they won't know if it's going to be taken away?
No, I mean, personally, I don't like that they've taken certain cards out of Arena. I don't like that because I think it'd be, I mean, it's more difficult, but it would make a lot more sense and feel a lot better if they just had more cards that balance certain classes in Arena. Like the reason they've done it is because Mage and Rogue are like the best Arena classes. Well, they could just have more of a kind of, okay, let's make some good priest cards for Arena. Like this, I don't like the fact that if you could get say you get Eerie Statue in your priest Arena deck, you're like, oh my god, what if I get Purified? But then it's not even an Arena, so it's like...
Right.
I don't like that, but I think it'd be completely fine in tournaments. I think tournaments are a completely different thing. Like Arena, there's not like high stakes on the line. It's not like...
Right. Everybody has access to like Arena overall, and it's kind of weird because those rules, like how you can't display those rules of like these cards aren't in here, and how do you communicate that? But in a tournament or a competitive scene, I mean, we just saw it with Batstone.
It's a lot easier to just...
Yeah 13 total cards they just took out, and very popular cards too. So it meant that every single deck almost, or every single class, except for Priest. I don't think anyone banned Priest cards. I would have loved a meme ban of Purify. I would have paid somebody $500 right then and there just to ban Purify. But it very much changed the game, and we saw 50,000 people watch it, so they didn't feel confused. They communicate it well, and I thought it was great. So I hope that we do see more of this going further.
And it's not even something they have to put in the game itself either. It's just the tournaments themselves are, you know, just administering the rules of what the tournament is by saying you can bring 3 decks, you can bring 5 decks, etc. This is just goes right into that.
Right. Totally. Batstone. I'm trying to think, is there anything else you guys wanted to chat about Batstone, alternate formats in Hearthstone?
Just that it's great. For people, I think one of the reasons it attracted so much attention was because people are just used to the same format over again, and people have like put hours into certain decks, so people know what they think are the best decks. So you see the same decks every tournament, like, and you see Yogg and Tuskar banned, you're like, oh, like I'm not going to be seeing these things I see all the time and in every single game. Like people are actually going to have to be creative, and I'm going to see interesting, maybe cool decks, interesting new cards being played that I don't normally see played. Like I think that's one of the things with tournaments going forward. I think there needs to be more players be more innovative and creative.
So I didn't put this in the notes, so I might be putting you on the spot, Jackie. I apologize, but you hit on something, had me wonder. There's a lot of things that make a good Hearthstone player, where do you put, for you personally, where do you put like deck building and innovation in that in level of importance for a good Hearthstone player?
Very important. I think it's very important. I think if you gave a good player and a new player the same deck list, I don't think it would take that long for the new player to be able to play it, not quite as well, but like to a similar-ish level. Like I think understanding how cards work and how cards interact with each other and like mana curve, like it's, I think it's important.
Yeah, it's kind of like mimicry, right? It's one thing for, you know, somebody, you know, this is an awful, oh my God, my analogies are so bad, but let's use Tom Hardy in The Dark Knight Returns, right? He creates this voice for Bane, right? So you've got this brand new voice. We haven't really heard it in movies before. That's a big deal. I can do a pretty good Bane impression. JR does a pretty good Bane impression. Everybody does a Bane impression, right? But it's not that it's a difficult impression. That's what makes it great. He came up with it. And I think that, oh my God, I'm going to get so many emails for that one. Ugh. Anyways, the idea is that you're right. It is totally easy to mimic fairly high level play. And Hearthstone is a game of fractions of percentages, yeah, especially at the high level where you're talking, you know, and you're what, maybe especially for these fast decks, you're talking 8, 9, 10 turns sometimes. That's actually not that big. If you get, you know, 7 or 8 of those turns, if you get those plays correctly, you're going to be fairly close. You're not going to finish top 50 legend. You're not necessarily going to even make legend, but you're going to run it at a fairly high skill level. So
like if a high level player and a low level player both have turn 1 Fiery Bat, turn 2 Huge Toad, turn 3 Animal Companion, they're both going to be making the exact same play, like regardless of their skill level, because even it's just like obvious, like on curve.
That's why I like Secret Paladin so much, because I always knew what to play on each turn. Yeah. It's just, yeah, I mean, they might as well have made it glow red for me, because that's basically turn 2 mini bot, turn 3 muster, turn 4 piloted Trevor, 5 Lotheb, and then you know the drill.
They should have that be the tutorial in Hearthstone instead of what they have now.
I think I just sent some people back into like NAM with that. They're like, no, not the curve, not the curve, not again. So at least we don't have that going on. Now it's just what turn 2 totem golem, turn 3 golem, turn 4 faceless, or flame wreath faceless. Sure. Amazing. I love it. Just shift it right on over.
Although, but then there are some, like it depends on the deck though, because like Token Druid and Malygos Druid, for example, like it's a completely different, like it requires a lot more thinking, and it's a lot more kind of, you have to understand the game a lot better to be able to play that deck well.
Absolutely.
Same with like a Miracle Rogue, it's like the same thing. You have to have a really good understanding. But a lot of the strongest decks are the easy to play decks.
Well, they're very mid range or tempo-y, where it's just, you know, kind of put your strongest card out that fills up the most of the blue crystals on your screen with crystals. One card. Right? You don't even have to know the name for them. You just know that you want to see as few of those as possible at the end of your turn, and you win. Versus, there are a lot of high decision making decks. Speaking of, I'm so good at segues tonight, some high decision-making decks. Let's talk a little bit about the ladder.
Beat him or join him.
Ah, oh, no.
So every week we do try to give you an idea of what we do think about the current state of the ladder, what recommendations on what we think you might want to run, what you might be running into. We're going to deviate from that format a little bit and just make Jackie talk about what he thinks the really good decks are and why, and what he would recommend for certain players at certain ranks, and, get as much knowledge from Jackie as we can. So, Jackie, first and foremost, in your opinion right now, man, I might be putting you on the spot again here. What do you think is the best deck for the ladder right now in Hearthstone?
I Can I say two? I think there's two.
No, one. No, yes, you can say two. That's totally
I'll
fine.
I'll say two anyway. But
okay.
I think Shaman is just so crazy, in my opinion. Like, Aggro Shaman's just... Like, I don't play it because I try... Like, my whole thing is, like, I try to be different and play it in Riddus. But I just get crushed by it, like, so much. I mean, a lot of it is down to Tuskar. Like, Tuskar can win games on its own, where a lot of people hate it. But the deck is just so powerful. I can just close games out really early on, really sure. easily. Another one, which is... I think Maligos... Mali Druid is really strong. And I've seen a lot of people playing it on ladder, and there are games where you think, like, you've won, and then suddenly you're like, oh, Maligos, Moonfire, Living into your face. You're like, what? This is like Savage Roar, Force of Nature all over again.
But, right. Oh, yeah, except you knew that one was coming.
Oh, right, yeah. It's really powerful, yeah. It's really
powerful. Interesting. I did not expect Maligos Druid to be coming from that. So I think you alluded to it earlier. Maligos Druid is a little bit more thought process oriented. It is a little bit more difficult to play. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, because instead of it's a lot of turns, you're like doing multiple things in one turn. You're like using gadgets turn and drawing a load of cards, or like you have to think, oh, when am I going to use my innovate? When, like, because we drew it, you have to think about your mana usage a lot more. But,
Got it. Yeah. So that makes a lot of sense. A lot of our listeners are kind of in the rank five, I'd say to rank five to rank 15. We have a big spread there. We obviously have legend players. We have some people below that, but I feel like the vast proportion of our listeners would be hanging out kind of in those ranks. If you were going to recommend, and we get this question almost every week, so I figured we'd throw this in there. If you're going to recommend a deck that is centered around that level of skill, that would help them climb, but also help them kind of learn more about the game, is there any decks in particular, like, oh man, bread and butter deck that you need to know if you're wanting to be a good Hearthstone player is X? Are there any of those decks that would come to mind?
Aggro Shaman. Like, if your pure thought process is right, I just want to climb ranks, I want to climb as many ranks as possible, just learn Aggro Shaman. It's not one of the most difficult decks. Obviously, you still have to have a good understanding of the game to be able to climb, but it is just extremely powerful, especially with the addition of Maelstrom Portal as well, has really helped it as well. Like, it's just really, yeah, really good.
Good. I'm glad you said that, because that's what I was thinking of running this month on NA. So now I know straight from Jackie, that's what I'm running.
JR. Yeah, I was going to say Aggro Shaman or Dragon Warrior. Either one of those are pretty good right now on the ladders and ranking up. I would say definitely Maligos Druid. If you hit Legend, it's a really good deck. I've seen lots of people running it on Legend with great results. It's a good deck. And Tempo Storm, I saw, just had it as their number one deck this week in their meta report. So Jackie Chan, you're right up there with it.
Another one that's extremely powerful at the moment.
Discard Lock?
Yeah. The new 1/3 Malkazar's Imp, that's what it's called. I think that's what it's called. That's like really, really good. And Silverware Golem. Like, both those cards are just nuts.
Interesting.
I'd say it's probably slightly more difficult than Aggro Shaman, but it's just really, really powerful.
Okay. Awesome. Well, I don't want to go too much deeper, because honestly, the meta isn't changing that much. So we harp on the same thing over and over. Rock, paper, scissors, Aggro Shaman, Hybrid Hunter, Dragon Warrior, they're all really good. If you're a fairly competent player, throw in some of those Maligos Druid type things going forward. But let's talk about the bread and butter here. Let's get down to the meat and potatoes of the show, and that is teching your deck. So We would be doing you all a disservice if we didn't talk about deck building with Jackie on the show. So instead of going into raw deck building, we want to help people make their current decks better. And we are going to still talk about deck building because we still have to, but especially teching those decks. So how do we do that? We tech them. And so whether you're running a fine-tuned deck or your own invention, making tech decisions will allow you to have the upper hand in the ladder and on tournaments. So we're going to kind of approach it from this angle of the basics, advanced teching, and of course, deck building. So JR, I'm going to pass this one to you. So what is teching and what purpose does it serve in Hearthstone?
Well, I mean, teching, for the most part, the way that I understand it is, you know what's out there right now in the meta. For example, you might say Doomhammer right now, and weapon classes are extremely good right now, and you're seeing them a lot in the ladder. So there might be a card or two that you might want to tech into your deck to help combat that. For example, you might go, well, Harrison Jones is a tech card. Acidic Slime is a tech card, and you might tech going that way. But as far as sorry, I lost my train of thought all of a sudden. But
choo-choo.
But no, that's the basic idea: is look at what's good in the meta and try to do some things to kind of counter it a little bit and maybe come up with a card. And that might be with archetypes as well. Like if the meta right now is very control heavy, you might start teching in cards to make a deck more aggro related. And if you're seeing things more aggro related, you might start teching to combat that early game and try to go more mid range and, you know, something like that.
Jackie, is there anything that you would add to that as far as, you know, what teching is? So we're building our foundation here on teching.
No.
Nope. Good. Awesome. Great.
Hey, I said something right.
I know. Yeah. We always, every time we have a pro player on and we're asked to talk about something, we're like, oh, please don't say something awesome that totally corrects everything I say. Please don't. So perfect. So I think this one, I mean, Jackie, you've created Egg Druid, Camel Hunter have both kind of been your babies. You've brought some amazing, you know, Yogg decks. You're talking about Reno Nazoth Rogue when most people are playing Aggro Shaman. Like, you are clearly a deck innovator. But I've also seen a lot of your work, too, and a lot of it is just very elegant, very simple tech changes to very good decks. What information are you looking for, or are you needing before you make those changes? Like, what are you looking for before, like, oh, I know how I can beat this, or I'm seeing a lot of this, I need to change this. What's that thought process like for you?
Well, I mean, you'll usually want to tech a deck after you've kind of come across a similar situation over and over again. Like, you've been playing for example, I play quite a lot of Hunter, and there was a time where a lot of people were playing Miracle Rogue, and over and over again, I'd be playing Hunter, and I'd be like, oh yeah, I'm in a really good spot. And then they'd have a Stealth Gadgetzon that I just couldn't kill, and it would just draw their entire deck. Or against a Druid with like a big Ancient of War, and just the situation of I'm over and over again, my opponent has one minion and I just can't kill it. So you think, oh, if I put Deadly Shot in my deck, then this will help me in these multiple situations, which is like stopping me from winning games just because I can't kill a single target minion. So I put Deadly Shot in my deck, and then suddenly I'm like, oh, I can kill the Gadgetzon, I can kill the Ancient of War. And just helps. It's just about finding why you're losing games. Like, what is letting the deck down? What is your barrier? And like getting through that barrier.
Totally. Yeah. Okay. So perfect. Looking those things. I feel like, so Jackie, I'm a very tilt heavy player. When I lose to Aggro Shaman, I will insist that I've been losing to Aggro Shaman all night. So I feel like something that might be important for people who kind of don't have that totally accurate grasp on what they're actually seeing is tracking their own stats. Do you think that that's a good thing for a newer player to do, is to track those stats and matchups so they don't feel like that one time they lost to Aggro Shaman is the 30th time?
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. It definitely is. I actually don't track my stats, but I should. Like, I should. Like, I'm really bad because I kind of go off feeling. I'm like, oh, yeah, this deck feels good. It must be good. Like, and then if someone asks me a win rate, I'd be like, oh, yeah, I got like a 70% win rate. I'm just like making it up. But no, it does really help. It does really help.
Yeah. And for our listeners, and honestly for myself, and honestly, JR, for you, we are not Jackie, okay? We can't just guess, be like, yeah, you know what? I'm a legend player. I'm good enough. If you're not at that point, you should be tracking your stats. But, you know, it's one of those things, as do as Jackie says, not as he does.
It helps, like, it make a lot more clear what your weakness is as well. Like, say you're playing a deck and, like, you feel like you're doing okay, and then you look at your stats and you're like, oh, I've only got, like, a 25% win rate against Shaman. Like, why is that? What's wrong with my deck? How can I change this? Like, how can I make my deck slightly better against Shaman so that it won't affect my other matchups too much, but it can hopefully really help this one? So, like, Doomsayer, for example, is, like, great against Shaman. So just chuck Doomsayer in your deck and you just beat Shaman. So.
Well, you actually did a perfect job in leading me to my next question for you. Is, are there any really, like, popular easy techs that, like, almost every player should know to make? Like, JR hit on a really popular one. When you're seeing a lot of weapons, throw in a Swamp Ooze or a Harrison. Are there some other ones that come to mind? Doomsayer sounds like is
Doomsayer
one.
Doomsayer is, like, the key. Like, if because a lot of the time, if you can get, like, frustrated, it would be in these matchups where you just get crushed by aggro early on, or, like, Tuskar will just end the game on turn three. Doomsayer is insanely powerful against aggro at the moment, like, especially with the lack of silence in the game. Doomsayer is just the best anti-aggro card at the moment.
Awesome. Any other ones you can think of that are also, like, you use a lot? Deadly Shot sounds like is kind of a tech sometimes.
Yeah, it depends what you come against. Like, I don't think Deadly Shot's that great right now because there's a lot of very, like,
sure,
board study aggressive decks. But it depends what you like. When a lot of people started playing Freeze Mage, like, Zoo was, like, the most powerful deck at one point, and everyone started playing Freeze Mage, so people put Crazed Alchemist in their Zoo just so that they can use it on the Doomsayer, because it was their only way of dealing with Doomsayer, pretty much. And just
right,
that single tech would win them games on its own, because if the Doomsayer Frost Nova went off, they would just lose their whole board and just lose the game.
I remember that. Yeah, that was, I saw a Crazed Alchemist last week and I was like, ooh, I don't know if this is exactly the time or place, but whatever. Kudos to you, sir. So awesome. All right. So that's kind of basic stuff, right? So knowing what teching is, knowing kind of what information you need to be able to make those techs, and then your go-to techs. I feel like those go-to techs should be something that any player who wants to approach the game more competitively, become, you know, rank, I always think in our show, like, rank 5 to legend and above type players, like, I feel like those are pretty basic and necessary skills for that. Is there anything else you would add for that player as far as, here's what you need to know when you're thinking about that deck building teching piece?
It's a different one. Cause like it's a lot of teching is like not so much, oh, I need to remove a weapon, or a lot of it is, do I need to tech my deck against control or against aggro? Like, as a whole kind of general, like, for example, when I was building Token Druid, the deck was, like, amazing against control. You just flood the board. Eventually, they run out of AoE, and you just win the game. But I was struggling against aggro. Like, you can beat aggro really easily when you have your innovates and, like, lots of mana ramp early on. But if you don't, you can just fall behind, and, like, swipe is your only board clear. So I just think, right, what am I going to change about this deck that I'm still going to win control matchups most of the time, but I need to help out with aggro. So at the time, I had like two Savage Roars, which are really bad against aggro, because they're only good when you have stuff on the board. And against aggro, right, you never have stuff on the board. So basically, I just took out a couple of the cards that are good against control, because I can probably beat control anyway, and just get more ramp, more AoE, more early minions to fight against aggro. Yeah.
Sure.
It's a bit off topic, but...
No, that was perfect. It's these little knowledge nuggets that we're hoping to glean here. So that's absolutely, absolutely perfect. I'm trying to take notes as you're talking. I'm like, yep, that's a good idea. Oh, well, didn't think of that. Perfect. Let's go there. So that's perfect. So let's go a little bit deeper then. So we've got a good basics. So, I mean, Jackie, you came up with this concept with Egg Druid as an even like a viable way to play Druid when nobody else was doing that. That takes some creativity. Like, do you have a process for this? Did you just stumble upon it one day and be like, Dragon Egg and Druid, there's some good cards that might work there? Or was it like, I really feel like Druid needs to be doing something differently here, and here's the ideas that I have. What kind of was that process like for you?
Egg Druid, I actually worked on Egg Druid for like ages. Like, I had loads of different lists. Like, I was running like Violet Teachers and Nourishes, and kind of the more time went on, the more aggressive it became. And then Living Roots was brought out, and I was like, oh, this is perfect. And eventually it got to a stage. I actually think Egg Druid was like extremely underrated. I think it was an extremely powerful deck, and I think it could have seen play in tournaments if people were aware of how strong it was.
Why do you think it didn't? Do you think it was just because there wasn't enough people playing it? So there wasn't enough data out there to convince them of that?
I think partly there wasn't enough people playing it, and partly that... when it was one of those decks where when you lose hard. Like, you lose basically when you've lost, you know you've lost. Like, you've lost, they're still at like 30. You're still at 30 health, but you know you've lost, because as soon as you lose the board, you lose the game. And so against some decks, you lose the board on turn 2 or 3, and the game's instantly over. So when you lose, you get absolutely crushed. But
you just don't lose.
Yeah, I know, exactly.
That's the key.
No, because I finished number 2 in EU in December, and I was purely with Egg Druid. And
wow,
it's just really underrated deck.
Yeah, I feel like something too. Like, I feel, and we talked about this earlier when it came to creativity in Hearthstone. It's something that I feel like people are very afraid, and even some of the best pros in the world are very stubborn to do. Especially when there's stakes out there, when there's money on the line. And that's, I think, and I do, to a point, I think that the current kind of formats kind of deter you from that even more. I also think
people are afraid to take risks when there are already proven decks out there with stats behind them as well.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
But that's another thing I think the last Hero Standing format is a lot more, you can afford to take more risks. But a lot of the tournaments at the moment are Conquest. And so it's like, if one deck could just get 3-0'd and you lose. Whereas Last Hero Standing, you take Priest. Priest loses, but then it's not like you have to win a game with Priest. Like, you're just like, oh, okay, I'll just use my other two decks instead. So I think Last Hero Standing is a really healthy format for...
Interesting. Because I remember we do this show every week, and I remember last year where we were just on Last Hero Standing really hard. Conquest came out and felt like the community was like, praise the Lord, we're done with Last Hero Standing. And I've heard this more and more that in hindsight, it feels right. I mean, I don't even say it feels like it's true that Last Hero Standing seemed to be the better competitive format. Do you think that is true?
I do. Yeah. I completely think it's true. Yeah.
Do you think it's just because we've now seen so much Conquest, or do you think that it's just supreme and better, and Conquest should just be gone?
Every way. I think it requires more skill and thinking as well, because you can't have any holes in your lineup. You're like in Conquest, you can just bring decks that are just generally good against anything. Like, you just bring like aggro Dragon Warrior, aggro Shaman, you know they're probably going to get a win because they're just generally powerful decks. Whereas Last Hero Standing, you can't have a single deck. Like, if your whole lineup is weak to Freeze Mage, you can just get 3-0'd by Freeze Mage. Like, you have to have no holes and make sure you can beat every possible deck that could come against you. So you actually have to work hard on your lineup, like what you're actually going to bring.
But then the problem with Last Hero Standing is what we saw last year, when there was a deck that was so, so powerful with Patron Warrior that it you know, that's all people were bringing. So I think a lot of people, when they think badly about Last Hero Standing, is because Patron was so prevalent in the competitive scene, because that deck needed to be balanced.
Yeah, there shouldn't be decks like that that are
right, exactly.
Clearly a lot more powerful than this. But yeah, no, I agree with you.
Yeah, totally. So, okay, so keeping down the list here, I don't want to keep you too late, Jackie, because I already know. Well, I'd keep too early, I guess. Yes, I don't want to keep you
like
too
4
early. Oh, man.
He's already celebrating Talk Like a Pirate Day.
Are there any like big do's and don'ts when it comes to changing up your decks when you're thinking about making a change?
I think it's great to experiment. I think a lot of people just think, oh, that card sucks, I'm not even going to bother trying. Like, for example, Soul of the Forest is a card that no one really used like 6 months ago. But because it's really bad a lot of the time, but it's very good in specific situations. If you have a deck that revolves around flooding the board over and over again, you can get insane value out of it. I think one of the best things is to not be like, oh, that card sucks, and be more kind of willing to try new things and experiment. And like, whenever I'm creating new decks, I create new decks like all the time, and like 90% of them are just awful. Like, because I'm just trying stuff, trying different cards. But then there'll be the odd time with like, oh yeah, this works really well with this. Like these, it's just, and decks, like, you're not going to make a deck and then it's going to be instantly good. Like, to make a deck, a new creative deck, you have to work on it and put time into it and work out what its weaknesses are, how you can improve those weaknesses. Like, yeah, it takes a lot of like trial and error.
Right. No, you're totally right. So something that I struggle with is, for me, I always find that I'm always conflicted, because I want to climb the ladder. I want to do well. I want to hit legend, or, you know, hit high single digits. And I want to do that. And I feel like it almost feels like being a deck builder, creator, and innovator for somebody with limited time is kind of conflicting with being a high skill cap player with existing decks. Do you think that there's a way to kind of reconcile both of those, or is it pretty much, well, yeah, if you want to do this, you're screwed, basically?
No, I don't think it's like that. I think one of the best, like, if you don't have that much time for deck building, you can still think like, okay, what? Basically, a lot of the time creating new decks is about beating the meta. Like, what are people playing at the moment? What can I create that is really good against? For example, Camel Hunter. At the time, Combo Druid was the like, it was kind of widely considered the best deck, and everyone was playing. What deck was I talking about? Combo Druid.
Yeah.
Double Force Nape, Double Self Draw. Everyone was playing Combo Druid, and literally it was like the last day of the season, and it was all I was seeing on ladder. I was like, well, I just need something that's going to be Combo Druid, and I'll win every single game. And Desert Camel is insane against Combo Druid, because they never played any one drops, and Hunter is just generally being aggressive, just crushes Combo Druid almost all the time. And so I made the deck specifically to beat Combo Druid, and I did over and over again. And that's when I finished Rank 1 Legend, because I created a deck that was good against what everyone else was playing. Like, it wasn't very good against Zoo, but not many people were playing Zoo on ladder. And so, yeah.
Got
beating
it.
What you're up against.
Right, right. So last question for you, and then we're going to take a look at JR's deck and give him some free advice. going forward, is what's the best advice that you could give somebody wanting to be a better deck builder or be a deck builder in general? Is there something that's like, dude, you've got to do this. You've got to make this happen.
Be creative, try new things, have fun. Having fun is important because you've just got to enjoy. It's just so much better if you just enjoy it. Like, oh yeah, this is really cool. I'm going to crush someone with Purified Priest. And then it feels like when you beat someone with your own deck that you built, it's a much better feeling than, oh yeah, I'll beat someone with Aggro Shaman that I've just copied off someone else. It's a really good feeling. And that's one of the things I enjoy about deck building, because it's, you just get involved. You're like, oh, I made this, that I've come up with this, like, and I'm just crushing this person with it. It feels great.
Right.
And even further than that, though, is when you make your own deck and you beat someone and then they add you and then cuss you out.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah, is even more fun.
It's the best. The best.
Oh, I love it. Yeah. All right. So let's spend a few minutes here. So JR has made this concoction, which he has created, creatively called Aggro. Jackie, how important is naming your deck when you're deck building?
Very important.
So yeah. JR already strike one.
I'm already failing.
You're failing. So I'm going to run down the deck list here. We've got, it's a warlock, called it Aggro. You've got two abusive sergeants, two flame imps, two leper gnomes. Oh my God, I hate you already. Two Malkazar imps, two POs, power overwhelmings, two soul fires, two bluegill warriors. Wow. Two dark peddlers, two Darkshire librarians, two succubus, two tiny knight of evil, two silverware golem, two wolf riders, two fists of Jiraxxus, and two doom guards. Did I miss any?
Nope.
And I have bad dyslexia, so I skip lines all the time.
Okay. The idea behind this deck was it's just straight up discard warlock, but trying to be as aggressive as possible, trying to go to face as much as possible, not really trying to do a lot of trades unless they are absolutely necessary. That's the idea behind it.
I love it. Sounds like a JR deck through and through, staying true to your mantra of face. I love it. Smart. So, Jackie, looking at this deck, actually, you know what? I'm going to just sit back. JR, take it away. Ask Jackie questions. Do whatever you want to do. I shouldn't be asking the questions here. It should definitely be you.
I mean, this is literally the first iteration of this deck. And the whole idea behind it was to play around with the discard mechanic and also try to be very aggro related. And as you said earlier in the show, like, building a deck is a very iterative process. You know, you got to kind of figure out what's working and what's not. And so far, this deck has gotten me to rank 5. It has been very successful against any slower deck, any deck that only puts out like one or two creatures. It destroys priests, but so does everything else. But the problem that I have is against any deck that floods the board. Any deck that ends up being faster than this, if I can't get the discard mechanic to really work and get, you know, the creatures out that I want, it'll fizzle out. But the deck is also very good at just refilling the board very quickly.
Interesting.
So with that said, you know, looking at that, what recommendations or what do you think I should think about in the next iteration of this?
Where would you say you struggle against other aggressive decks and decks that flood the board? I mean, your deck is like super aggressive. Like, there's probably not going to be much more aggressive than this. But when you're against other aggressive decks, even though the deck is all about going face, you need to like fight for the board early on. Like, if you lose in like these aggro versus aggro matchups, if you lose the board early on, it can be super hard to come back. And you don't have like that much burst. And like you, if you let your opponent build up a board, then you're just going to be taking repetitive damage from your minions, and you're just doing like one Wolf Rider doing 3 damage to their face that will easily be killed off by something else. Like, you do really need to, and that's why I think Imp Gang Boss should definitely be in the deck, because it's so good against other aggressive decks. Like, can trade into so many different things and get so much value. So if it was me, I would personally put Imp Gang Boss in the deck, probably in place of Wolf Rider.
Okay.
Yeah, I think you need to, like, if you want to change the deck, have board control slightly more in your head instead of just everything going face kind of thing.
Yeah, so like cut Wolf Rider, add that. Sorry, JR, you were about to say something.
I don't even remember what I was going to say.
I think Wrathguard would be really good in this list as well. Maybe instead of Darkshire Library. No, not Darkshire Library. Tiny Knight of Evil. Yeah.
Tiny Knight of Evil is one of those cards that has been very good in certain cases, but it doesn't work as well as what I would like. When it works, it is amazing, but it's very small percentage of the game. And I think you're right that like something like Wrathguard, where it's going to always be good when I put it down, or Imp Gang Boss, it's always going to be good when I put it down, instead of a case of, you know, not as, you know, only is awesome 10% of the time.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of the time it will just be like a 2-mana 3/2 and just right. Like, oh, that's not good enough kind of thing.
So I do want to, because I had to look it up for a second, for those who are like, what the f- is a Tiny Knight of Evil? because I was immediately like, I can't remember this card. It came out in TGT. It's a 2-mana 3/2 Warlock Demon, reads, whenever you discard a card, gain +1/+1. So from looking on the outside, JR, to me, it looks like you're very much committing to like those discards being a thing. Like, you want that to be a thing and a theme in your right. deck. I think I hinted at it earlier, is sometimes you want your theme to work out so well that maybe you don't necessarily put the best cards in those locations that you necessarily can. Does that make sense? Am I getting a correct read that if we were critiquing as to why, is it kind of came one of those things of like, would that be like an overcommitment to discard? Does that make sense?
As it's being a little greedy. Like I said, when it works amazing.
Right.
So it's definitely being greedy in that regard. Because, you know, I want to get that one big turn, and then afterwards the guy adds me and cusses me out, which is exactly what happened with that card when the guy added me and cussed me out afterwards.
I love it. JR, you have the best cussing out stories.
I know.
Every time I see it, I'm always like ready. So every time I get a friend request, and I've gotten a few in the last couple of weeks, I'm like already really defensive because I think I'm about to go into like JR mode, and they're like, hey, you John from Well Met? And I was like, ooh, never.
Whew. No one knows me for some reason. They know you, but they don't know me. So
it's because we don't really call you Eldorian.
That is true.
That often.
That's true.
That might be it. Anyway, sorry, I digress. Anything else we want to talk about with this deck here? JR, is there any other piece of advice that you're looking for from Jackie?
So there's two other cards in here that I'm not 100% sure about, and I want your thoughts about them, is Leper Gnome and Fist of Jiraxxus.
Leper Gnome, I mean, I just think Argent Squire is better. Like, it's better for fighting for the board early on and sticking there and fighting right. against opponent's minions, whereas Leper Gnome dies to a lot of things. It's 2 damage to your opponent's face, but then they're just going to kill it with their Tunnel Trog and then just build up a big board. And it's just so much harder to win against aggro, because like, you'll get the early damage. You get like, oh yeah, I got 2 damage to my face from Leper Gnome, but you won't have the board, and so you won't be able to push more damage from minions.
Now, I will say I did win a game where the guy had enough taunts out there and he was at 2 life, and I just played Leper Gnome and power overwhelmed it. And then,
yeah, really.
And then did the whole John emote thing for a while.
Yep. So. I am the king of the BM, Jackie. If there's one thing that I bring to the show is that I have massive BM game. So
I stay away from BM. I stay away. Because once I tried to BM someone too hard, and then I lost the game because of it.
Like, oh, no.
Yeah,
so see, that's the trick, is you can't do that. Or you never...
Unless someone BMs me, then it's a whole different kettle of fish.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah, yeah. They start, it goes...
Yeah,
exactly. It goes crazy. So something that I feel like a lot of people do as well in deck building, and Jer, I'm glad you brought this up, is it's kind of like the different stages of addiction, and one is justification. I don't know if that's actually true, but you like justify that one time a card won you a game as a slot in your deck. I feel
but
like
it made
people,
an amazing story though.
Yeah, it's true. We've got an amazing story. So for like the 15 times it wasn't the best play and you would have really benefited from being able to play an Argent Squire with an abusive sergeant to trade up with that Tunnel Trog, you went for the, yeah, but it won me the game that one time. That's like one of the things that I struggle with a lot too.
In terms of Fist of Draxxus, I actually really like it. I've played a little bit of Discard Lock lately, and it feels like even though it's 4 mana and it has to be discarded for it to be useful, really, like, because playing it for 4 mana is just awful. It feels like because it's the card you don't really play so much, you can, I don't want to say reliably, but fairly reliably get it discarded because... kind of you play all your stuff and then Fist of Draxxus is what's left and then you draw something, it discards it, and then bam, Great Tempest Wing, kill a minion, or even just 4 damage to face. I think it's really good. I really like it, actually.
Awesome.
It's provided me some pretty good luck. Especially early on when they don't have anything on the board and then you know it's just going to hit them in the face, which is exactly what I want to do with this deck.
The dream is Doomguard with double Fist of Draxxus in hand. I've had that once, actually. It was
nice.
One of the best feelings ever.
Oh, I love it when the stars align. Okay, so we should probably go because we've been doing this for a while. We've got a couple emails to get through. But thank you, Jackie, for taking some time and picking apart JR's deck. And now JR will continue to climb from 5 to Legend. Because that's as easy as it does. Just kidding. yeah. So let's go ahead. Let's take some emails really quick.
We've got mail.
JR, go ahead. Change your pants. It's all right. No, you weren't expecting that one.
I don't know what this puddle is beneath me.
It's the tears. It's the tears of all those mid-range decks that you're wrecking with aggro lock.
Thank you.
So let's go ahead. We got a couple emails. So we do love getting your emails. We want to do our best to answer them as often as possible. Email us at wellmet@blizzpro.com. This first email is from F. Murray's, probably. That's how you pronounce it. He says, hi, guys. Great show every time. I don't know if it was discussed before, but why not adopt a rotation where a new set adventures release and the oldest one leaves standard. This would allow all sets adventures to be live for 2 years. And the way Blizzard has it means that some sets will only be out for 1.3-ish years while the rest of the year will be in, or the rest of the year will be in for the full 2 years. It would also promote more changes in the meta by forcing cards out and forcing people to constantly adapt every 4 months or so. Keep up the great work, F. Murray's. What do you guys think about this? So instead of a yearly thing where cards go out, what do you think about when a new one comes in, the old one goes out, and just that a more aggressive in and out cycle?
I agree with that. I like it because it's also like instead of a like big change like at the end of the year, it's like, also, you can bring out cards. If you think, oh, this expansion is going away, these cards are leaving standard, we can print cards to replace, fill the slots that's been left. Like, say, Justicar rotates out. You can think, oh, I can put something similar that improves your hero power, maybe, stuff like that. But I think it's a good idea, and I think it's sensible.
What do you think, JR?
I think it's an interesting idea, and for a lot of the same reasons that Jackie was saying. I'm not a big fan of it though. I kind of like having the meta be have that really stable period and where new sets are what's changing the meta. Unfortunately, we're just not seeing that terribly much in this current set. So maybe this idea would end up being better. But I do like the idea of it. They didn't really do this either this year, and I thought they would, where the entire year of the Kraken, they would form cards that kind of had that theme, and then you had like a full theme that full year that was really about the year of the Kraken.
Kraken. Oh my. Yeah. Okay.
I pronounce words weird.
That's why we have you read the iTunes reviews.
Shaman instead of shaman.
Yeah, but you're European. You get to say those words, and it's actually like sexy, and the ladies love it. So I love it. Okay, sorry. Going on.
But no, I'm also a little bit biased because this is how Magic the Gathering sort of does it as well.
So. Conceptually, I like it. There's one thing that I would be worried about. The one thing that phasing out multiple expansions allows you to do, and I think this was a problem that they tried to solve initially, is that there was so much adaptation that people weren't creative enough in creating new things. Obviously, Jackie is not part of that that group of people, but there's not enough creation because you go, oh, cool, this one set is going out. I lost Imp Gang Boss. What's the next best 3 drop that I can put into Zoo to keep playing Zoo? And you see that. Whereas if you take a full year of cards worth out, you are forced to. And now you're changing 5, 6, 7 cards per popular deck, which, you know, if you double those up, that's almost half the deck. That's going to potentially shift the entire archetype, which I think is something that they were trying to do. Honestly, what I would love, maybe you do it every 2 expansions. So not as swingy as 12 months every year, so that you aren't seeing these big drastic changes and a bunch of, blah throughout the year. But at the same time, it's also not like every 4 months these cards are changing and you're only seeing 1 or 2 cards changing, 3 times a year. I would say maybe half that feels the best for me, but that's just honestly, I would never like disagree that Jackie is probably right overall, especially for, what high-end pro players would enjoy. I think they would enjoy that the most. Yeah. Let's hit this next one. This next one's from Russell. He says, I usually get to rank 15 consistently, but want to get higher. I know rank 15 is nothing to complain about and it takes time. And I also realize I need to work on my skill. The question is, how often do you feel the need to change decks when climbing to legend? Are you picking tier 1 decks and running it all the way? I've tried doing this, but when I change decks, I seem to see decks that my previous deck would have been better for. Do you have any suggestions for me from Russell? Jackie, do you want to take this one? So guy is, he wants to get legend. He's hitting the wall at 15. Obviously that's a long journey to go. What do you feel like is the most important things when it comes to deck switching for that type of player?
I think a lot of people have the feeling of, I've had the feeling a lot of times where you're playing a deck and then you're just getting beaten by a similar thing over and over again. So you switch deck and then suddenly they're playing something that beats the deck you've switched to. Like, I get that a lot. I think a lot of people get that feeling a lot. But when climbing, I think it's better to stick to one deck and be a deck that you know is strong and you play it, start playing it a lot so you get more confident with the deck and understand everything that's happening with the deck. So you come across different situations, and so when you next come across that situation, you know what you're doing. Whereas if you're kind of switching deck all the time, it's harder to play well because you're kind of coming across new situations every single game. Right. So if you purely want to climb, I think it's good to stick to a deck that firstly you enjoy playing, secondly, you know, is a strong deck.
Right.
And, yeah, that's what I'd say.
What do you say, JR?
I completely agree with Jackie. I think it's important to be consistent, especially when you're trying to learn and get better, to keep playing it and learning it more and getting better at what you're playing. And if you do end up changing decks and you feel like that is a necessary thing you need to do, consider when you change decks to switch to a deck that is plays very similar. Like if you're going from mid-range deck to mid-range deck or aggro to aggro or something like that, that way you're still kind of in that learning mode, even though you're having a different deck that you're playing. Sticking with that archetype, I think, is very important, especially when you're learning to rank up.
I totally agree. The last thing that I would say is that usually at rank 15, I would say there's still going to be a lot of like fundamental stuff that you're going to be learning. So switching decks a lot is going to not allow you to learn those and have those experiences and know when it's, you know, correct if you're playing aggro shaman, knowing when it's correct to overload on, you know, turn two and when it's not, or turn three, and knowing those matchup things. And I think switching decks is, I feel like most people, especially people who are learning, including myself, it's really easy to blame the deck for losing. But usually I would say in most double digits and even high single digits, a lot of those games are winnable. If you've ever gotten the opportunity to sit down with a coach and have them point those out, where they'll sit down and go, "What would you do?" And then they tell you why that's wrong. And then you realize four of your first five turns were wrong. And it's not the deck that is necessarily the issue. It's the way that you're playing. I highly recommend, if you're really wanting to get better, you aren't able to necessarily put hundreds of games in a month, get a coach. Get a coach, sit down with them, let them kind of show you some of those basics. I learned in 1 hour with a coach what would probably take me 20 learning myself. And so, but I'm also just not very wired for that. So I'm just like, help me learn this, help me understand these concepts to go forward. Cool.
I offer coaching.
Get Jackie. Yeah, I'm actually, Jackie, I did not know you offered coaching, or I would have said that first. And I will actually be emailing you soon, and we're going to play some Hearthstone. Sound good? Cool. All right. We're going to do it. I'm not even joking. I'll pay you whatever you want to teach me, because I want to know. We got to get out of here, though. It's been a heck of a show. It's okay. You don't have to coach me if you don't want to. He's like, no, I've been here an hour and 20 minutes, and I've had enough of that guy.
Actually, Jackie, if people were wanting to get you as a coach, where would they do that at?
They just need to send me an email. J_Hutton_95@hotmail.co.uk. I'd get back to you and have a chat and put stuff out.
Awesome. So do that. You should definitely do that. So let's jump into the last few things, do our shout outs and get out. Before we do, though, we do want to thank our friends of the show, Albert T, The Real Ben, and Coral. Thank you so much for supporting the show. If you want to know more, head on over to patreon.com/wellmetpodcast. No new patrons this week, but we've got some exciting things in the work for our Patreon going forward. Jer, what do we have for iTunes reviews?
Yeah, so this week we had an iTunes review in the USA from Crazy 4, and that's the number 4 photography.
With a PH.
He made one that I can easily pronounce. So thank you so much for that 5-star review. If you'd like to give us a 5-star review on iTunes, it helps us out a ton. Helps us get to more listeners like you. So just head over to iTunes, type in Hearthstone, you'll find Wellmet. Leave a nice little 5-star review there, and I'll try to mispronounce your name if you have something a little more crazier than Crazy for Photography.
Right. So, Jackie, I know you're going to talk about it, but I do also want to thank Fade to Karma for letting us have Jackie on the show. Fade to Karma has been an incredible organization. They pick up incredible players. We've got Rosh on the payload. with us every week, and she shows us up. And then having Jackie this week is just, they're legit. So you definitely need to check out fadetokarma.com. But Jackie, this is an opportunity for you to shout out all your stuff. Where can people find you? Where can people find Fade to Karma and everything else?
Well, I stream 6 days a week. Twitch.tv/JackieChan. On my Twitter at FDK_Jackie_Hearthstone, I kind of post my deck lists and keep people updated when I'm going to be streaming and that kind of stuff, tournaments I'm going to be in, etc. And thanks to my team, Fade to Karma, for supporting me and helping me like stream and be able to do this as a career.
It's amazing. So, yeah, it's amazing. And I've worked
with... Thank you guys for having me on the show.
Totally, man. Absolutely. We've been in the Jackie line for a long time. So we've talked to you. I should grab a soundbite of all the times we've talked about you on the show in the past, because there's been quite a few times. So it's really cool to have you on the show. The guys and girls over at Fade to Karma are absolutely amazing. So make sure you check them out. They've all been amazing to work with, and I cannot speak more highly of them as individuals and as an organization. JR, what are your shout outs for the week?
I just like to give a shout out to all of our listeners out there who listen to the show and send us emails and tweets. This week, if you would like to come join us over on World of Warcraft, I'm going to try to be playing that more this week. I didn't really get a chance to play last week, and I got called out in chat because of it, because I was absent. Unfortunately, I had a lot of behind-the-scenes Blues Pro work that I've been doing, as well as learning Arduino robotic stuff.
Bless
because
you.
Because we're going to build a life-size remote-controlled BB-8 from Star Wars, and it's going to be awesome.
Oh, sick.
Yeah, so I'm trying to learn that so we can build something, and... So I've been spending a lot of my free time lately on that stuff. But this week, I'm going to definitely be on WoW. So come over and join us on the Corona server US Horde side. We have a well-met guild on there. I will be playing. And if you want to join, just hit up Eldorian on our Discord channel over at discord.gg/blizzpro.
Yes, do that thing. As for me, so before I do, I want to do a shout out for Kevin. Kevin was on Rally Point with Scott Johnson 7 and the Rally Point crew talking about Hearthstone Arena very shortly for about 20 minutes, about an hour and a half there. And he's on there for about 20 minutes chatting. So that was cool. So go check that out. Rally Point podcast. It's on Bleacher Report. It's also on all your RSS feeds there. As for me, TwitchCon is coming up, not this coming week, but the week after, so I won't be here. So JR or Kevin will be pushing the buttons that week. But I'll be there with some incredible people, DJ Tyrant, Avison, Trista Ray from Misclix. It's going to be an amazing time. We're going to be talking about podcasting on Twitch, growing your Hearthstone community. So we've got that going, and then talked about the Con Before the Storm stuff earlier as well. Head on over to conbeforethestorm.com, I believe, for the World of Podcast stuff. Woo! All right, well, thanks for joining us for another episode of Well Met. Join us live every Sunday at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time at twitch.tv/blizzbro to get in on the conversation. And follow the show on Twitter at Well Met Podcast for additional news and updates. Well Met is exclusively supported by our fans. If you know and love the show, you can find out how to become a part of the family at patreon.com/wellmetpodcast. They also just introduced some Patreon stuff integration with Discord, so we might be trying to play around with that a little bit more in the future, so check that out. And we also have awesome Well Met t-shirts at store.blizzpro.com. By the way, tomorrow, well, technically when you're hearing this, today is Pirate Day. Send us a picture of your pirate deck, and we'll put you in a random drawing for a Well-Met t-shirt. Special thanks to Jake Butino for our music, Scythe Designs for our graphics, and, of course, Jackie, thank you so much for being on the show. Hope you had fun. Hopefully, have you on again sometime in the future. We love that. We learned so much. I can already see the emails coming in wanting Jackie back to replace me, so thanks a lot. So this has been episode number 78 of Well Met. We'll see you guys next week. Bye-bye. Bye, everyone. Bye.
Well Met is a production of BlizzPro.com. The show records live at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time at twitch.tv/BlizzPro. To get the latest news and information about the show, follow us on Twitter at Well Met Podcast or join us on our subreddit at reddit.com/r/WellMetPodcast. If you would like to support the show, you can find out how at patreon.com/WellMetPodcast.
God.